Hello, this is the third podcast of the Teach Computing Year 10 GCSE Computing Lessons. So far, this is the third episode, as I just said, and I'm going to talk to you about Lessons 6, 7 and 8, which were on the 24th of September to 26th of September. So my name is Alan O'Donoghue. I teach at Our Lady's Catholic High School in Preston. I'm a self-taught computing teacher. I didn't do a degree in computing science, and I don't profess to be an expert, but I am trying to get there. And I'm hoping to record these podcasts to share them with people, and hopefully you might like them. And if you don't like them, then you'll tell me why, and I'll try and change them. If you spot any mistakes in anything that I'm saying, please let me know, and I'll correct them. So I have a class of Year 10 pupils. They are 14 and 15 years old, and they have five lessons a fortnight. This week, we had three lessons. We had one on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and I'm going to talk about what happened in those lessons. So each week, I try to have at least one lesson focusing on computing theory and at least one lesson where we focus on the programming, coding part of computing science. The Monday lesson was computing theory, and I thought it was important to establish that children really, really understood input, process, and output, that they were able to identify these in systems, and I wanted to check that they did really understand that. But at the same time, from the specification for the course, it dictates that the children need to know what the importance of computer systems are in the world. Two concepts I wanted to introduce were hardware redundancy and disaster recovery. Now, of all the lessons I've taught so far, this, to me, just felt the flattest lessons of the ones so far. Because, well, we ended up relying on exercise books a lot in the lesson, and I felt it didn't, I don't know, maybe it's just first lesson on the Monday morning, but the children, I've just found that they were very quiet. They weren't as responsive as they had been in previous lessons. So the first thing they had to do was to consider all the different systems that they can think of that depend on computers. So I asked children to generate a long list, and these included things like airplanes and navigation systems, supermarkets, cars. One child mentioned the London Ambulance Service and air traffic control. We then went through and spent a little bit of time discussing the impact that it would have on the world if these computers and these systems crashed. So, for example, how would the London Ambulance Service cope, the London Ambulance Service, if their computer system crashed? So obviously what we need to do is we need to make sure that there are some redundant hardware elements within that. So the point of that was to consider the efficiency of having a redundant system within that system, so that if there was a fault, then you'd have something else that you could fall back to. And we talked about the concept of how these airplanes have got four engines on them, it's possible for them to fly on three engines and even two at times, although not to the same extent. So there was copious notes made in the lesson, some discussion, but I just found it a bit awkward, really, the fact that the children were just so quiet in the lesson, and they were just, I mean, maybe it was all new to them, or they just really weren't getting it. Then Tuesday. So we have open night coming up next week, and I decided that in Tuesday's lesson, because I had a lesson where I was really finding it difficult to engage the children, I decided to do something completely different on Tuesday. So for open night, I was toying with this idea of networking computers together within Scratch. There's a feature that you can switch on in Scratch called Mesh, where you can have one computer sends messages to others within the same network. And I had this idea, this notion that you could play some music and one computer would coordinate or control lots of other computers in the classroom so that you could have some sort of a firework display if you blocked all the lights out so there was no, and then the windows, so there was no light coming to the classroom, how you could have what would appear to be like a firework display. So that lesson, I allowed the children to work in groups to come up with coordinated sequences of flashing lights, and it was quite impressive the range of ideas that they came up with when they were given pretty much free rein. So at the end of the lesson, we had a show and tell where we picked a few different solutions that the class had come up with, and we showed them. Now, it's not related specifically or directly to the specification that we're following, but I thought it was an opportunity there for children to be creative using code. Then Wednesday, which was the last lesson of their week for computing, I had two visitors from a neighbouring school. As part of their continuing professional development, they spent a day in our school going around watching lessons, and they're ICT teachers, and I thought it'd be a good idea to let them have a look at some computing. So this was our coding lesson this week, and I wanted to reinforce some of the principles that we'd already covered in our previous computing and programming lessons, things like variables, assignment, inputs and outputs, and sequencing. Now, if you've been listening, in the last few coding lessons, I've been running a dojo. So the children were given a problem that they had to solve in groups. They had to come up with their solution, and then at the very end, they had to present their solution to the rest of the class. And we were looking at which were the best solutions, which were the tidiest, which were the neatest using the code. Today, I decided, rather than carry on for another lesson for them to explore these, I decided to present them with a solution to the problem. So the way I did this was I actually did some live coding. So at the beginning of the lesson, I typed in the code. So we had things like at the beginning. So this is to work out what somebody's name is, what their age is, and then say hello, you will be this age next birthday, which would be plus one added on. So the code went something like this. It was name equals input, open bracket, what's your name? Question, close bracket with the quotes, print, hello, name. Then the next question was to ask the person's age. So it was age equals input, open bracket, open quote, how old are you, close quote, close bracket. And then I introduced a new variable, which was age next equals int of age plus one. And as I was going through, I was explaining when I was doing it at each stage or testing the children's understanding. So if I'm making age next equals age plus one, why do I need to put int in front of it? And of course, they were saying, oh, you need to convert it into an integer because it's a string and you can't add one to a string because they're mixed data types. So reinforcing the use of the correct language. And then the last line of the solution was print. Next year you will be plus string age next plus years in quotes, close bracket. And then again, it was, why do we have to put string in front of age next? Because it's an integer. And if you try and put an integer into a phrase with a string, Python's going to not evaluate that because it's mixed data types again. So what I actually did was when I was presenting the code to the children, at various stages, I got them to type in to follow it and type it in on their computer at the same time, and we could test to see if it worked on theirs. And then finally, I asked them to copy down, once they'd got a working solution based on mine, to write in their books and then to annotate it and explain the various different blocks and what was going on. So I'd set them a homework in our previous coding lesson where I wanted them to, without using Python, but thinking in a Python-like way, to input two numbers from the user and then add those two numbers together and then present the sum of those two numbers. So they had to write this on a piece of paper, and I asked them to take the homeworks out and get together in threes and fours and to show the different people in the group of three or four what their homework solution looked like. So this gives an opportunity for those people who have really struggled to come up with a solution or they've not come up with the most efficient solution to compare and see what others had done. Once we'd shown each other what that looked like, I then asked them to build that solution and test it and then look at ways that they could improve it. And then again, I asked them to print that out, glue it into their books and then annotate it and explain. Now, what I liked was the fact that some of them hadn't started with that particular solution, although some had. In fact, there was one boy who the others were accusing him of cheating because they said to him, he just went online and he got it off the internet and he searched for it and he hasn't really made it himself. But then this boy, he said, well, no, actually, that's not the one I found online. What I did was I found this one online, but there was lots of stuff in there I didn't need. So I just took that out and I just, I got it running in a very neat style. Still, some of the others in the class didn't approve of that. And I said, well, no, what he's done is he's actually found a way of getting a solution by going online and searching for it. And they still were saying, no, no, he's cheating. And I said, oh, right, so who here has actually written their own Python interpreter? And this got blank looks. And I said, because you're using a tool that somebody else has created, so all that this boy is doing is he's taking somebody else's code that they've created and he's making it work for them. So, you know, I was actually encouraging him, although I was saying, you know, this is not always the best way to do it, but this is one solution. So at the end of the lesson, these two teachers, the visitors, I'd asked them if they'd spotted anything to make comments to me at the end when the class had gone. So what I liked was one of the teachers from the other school had said he liked the fact I wasn't too concerned that this boy had been searching online for solutions. Also, he liked the fact that other children had got solutions to the problem that weren't necessarily the best solution and hadn't exactly solved the problem. But he liked the fact that, you know, I was still praising them for the fact that they had a solution. It just wasn't the solution or the best solution or whatever. And the other teacher, he'd said he liked the fact that, you know, I was celebrating or putting a lot of emphasis on the fact that there is more than one way of achieving a similar solution or the same solution. So there we are. That was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the 24th to 26th of September. So as I'm getting to the end of this episode, I'd like to say I've been receiving lots of feedback, and please keep sending it in because I'm finding that really useful. People are asking questions and making suggestions. You can go onto the Audioboo site. You can go to audioboo.fm/technoteacher and you can actually comment, and you can record a comment, or you can just type one in. You can email me, alan@odonoghue.org.uk, or you can send me messages via Twitter at technoteacher. If you're not already using the Computing at School community that's online, I really, really recommend that you do. It's not the old one where there was the Google Groups. This one, there's different threads. People comment in the threads. Everybody's all very nice to each other. There's no them, only us. And you can subscribe to get one email a day that has a digest of all the activity. That's pretty much it. And if you haven't downloaded this from iTunes, you can. You just go to iTunes, you type in Techno Teacher or Alan O'Donoghue, and you can subscribe to the podcast there. Thank you very much for listening. Bye.